Welcome, everyone, to the Score Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Boone, the lead fantasy analyst at The Score, and today's episode is presented by Subway, who now delivers so you can get back to the game. We are on to week three here. We have 2 weeks of data now, so that means we can start to notice some trends in usage. It's still early. Normally, I wait until three games in before I really start to feel confident about what I'm seeing, but 2 weeks is a big enough sample size that we know now we're not completely overreacting to one big game, which, let's face it, a lot of people do that after the opener. It happens every single year. So since we're trying to drill down here on the usage, the snap counts, the targets, all that important stuff, we have a great guest today who is kind of making that his brand. It's Dwayne McFarlane of Football Guys, of the Matt Waldman RSP. You might also recognize his name from the Utilization Report, which is a big hit on Twitter. You can check him out on Twitter, at Dwayne McFarlane. Dwayne, I already told you this when we talked before, but I'm loving the content. I've been checking out all the notes that you've been dropping with the Utilization Report. It's just great stuff, and I'm glad that you're here today to share some of that knowledge with us.
Thank you, man. I'm so glad to be on. Anytime I can, you know, come on with someone and just get to talk football, I love it. And if I get to add data into that, that's my next thing I love. So it's like bringing those two, it's like chocolate and peanut butter for me.
All right, good stuff. Well, let's start with the Chiefs receiving core. And Tyreek Hill went down in week one. We saw Sammy Watkins go off in that game. Then DeMarcus Robinson and Mecole Hardman did the damage in week two. And we're talking about week winning performances here, right? Watkins had 9 for 198 and 3 touchdowns. Robinson had 6 for 172 and 2 touchdowns last week. And Mecole Hardman, people might not realize, but he had 4 for 61 and a touchdown. He also had a 70 plus yard touchdown called back due to a penalty. So there's a ton of fantasy value in that offense, we know. And maybe the answer to the question is just grab anyone who's attached or anywhere near Patrick Mahomes. I joked about that on Monday's episode. But how do you view that trio of wide receivers shaking out moving forward, starting with their game against the Ravens this week?
Right. I think, you know, to your last part of that point, that's the biggest thing. Pat Mahomes is plus Andy Reid, right? That's what's the tide that rises all ships. So you want to own any piece of this offense that you can. As far as the way I see this breaking down, you know, over the next few to several weeks with Tyreek Hill still out, I do think DeMarcus Robinson is actually the player that's going to give us more consistency. And that's just because of, you know, not just the utilization, but when you watch DeMarcus Robinson play, you know, he has a wider range of capabilities right now than Mecole Hardman. Now, Hardman can still be, you know, a very viable asset. It's just that he doesn't do well with press coverage. He doesn't understand a lot of the route running nuances of the NFL. He's still not fully immersed into Andy Reid's scheme and some of the concepts that are going on there. And that's really showing up, you know, on the film. Now, having said that, the couple things he does really well when still paired with Mahomes and Andy Reid, you know, does make him viable. So, for example, you know, Hardman's really good, you know, in these screen type plays or quick plays close to the line where they create space and let him run after the catch. And then the other thing, which you already alluded to, is the guy's super fast, you know, so he can get deep. And we know Mahomes is the guy in the league that you just can't outrun his throw. He's no matter where you are, whenever you're breaking free, he can find you and get that ball to you. So the good news there is on a lot of teams, a guy like Mecole Hardman with that kind of limited application on the field, you know, it would just be something that you would just have to avoid. But in the Chiefs, it could literally give you a week, like you said, that could win, you know, your week. And Hardman will have one of those likely coming. You know, it's going to probably come. If you look at who they get to play this week, we're going to be playing the Ravens. You know, it's going to be a shootout. So the way I see it ultimately working out, and last week we saw this, DeMarcus Robinson, 91% of the snaps, he ran routes on 91% of Patrick Mahomes' dropbacks. Mecole Hardman was at 73% of the snaps and then 80%. Now, what's interesting around DeMarcus Robinson that I don't know quite how to, you know, to your point earlier, we only have 2 data points. I don't know quite how to reconcile this. DeMarcus Robinson, you know, what I've always viewed him as and the way I've seen the Chiefs view him is more of a possession receiver. This last week, though, the Raiders came out in press coverage and Mahomes basically just said, okay, well, if they're going to do this, then we're going to push the ball vertically down the field. His average depth of target, Justin, was 25.3 yards.
It's just wild.
It's crazy, right? You know, DeMarcus Robinson's a guy I expect to work, you know, the intermediate area of the field, you know, 10, 12, 13 yards down the field. So I don't think we're going to obviously, and most users, I mean, listeners, they already know this. We're not going to continue to see, you know, huge weeks like that every week from Robinson, but I think his ability to beat press coverage, his ability to, you know, do a wider variety of things is going to keep him on the field more, probably make him the more consistent option. But Mecole Hardman is still going to hold value, you know, as a guy that can absolutely brick a big play and win your day.
So would you say that once Tyreek Hill comes back, and we don't know what the situation is there, he could be out even longer than expected, but once he's back, you feel like Robinson is the fantasy play at that point?
Yeah, I do think Robinson will be the fantasy play. Interestingly, in week one, he only saw 63% of the snaps while Hardman saw 78%. You know, so that was interesting. That's one I to your point earlier, I'd like to have that third or fourth data point, you know, just to see where we're at. But yeah, I do believe that Robinson will be the guy that'll be on the field more. But I see Hardman as being a guy that they'll still love to get out there and say, okay, we have Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman out here on the field at the same time, both being legitimate deep threats. And they're going to want to see how does the defense defend it. And then based on that, I think they'll adjust their game plan for that game.
And by the time Tyreek comes back, Hardman, you know, he's going to go through that rookie learning curve. He could be much improved by the time Hill gets back in this offense too. So it really is tough to project when you're talking about, you know, whatever it's going to be, 6 weeks, 8 weeks until we see Hill again.
Yeah, absolutely. And we still don't know for sure if that's a very firm timeline, you know, on Hill. You know, it's kind of something we're not hearing a ton around, you know, this week. But would it surprise us, you know, if all of a sudden, you know, he missed an additional couple of weeks? Who knows? But to your point earlier, you just got to own any piece of this offense you can. If for some reason Mecole Hardman were to go down, the name that people just, you know, I'll throw in that people need to remember is Byron Pringle. You know, they released him, then they brought him back. DeAnthony Thomas is really just the gadget guy. Pringle is actually a player that's got a wider skill set that could do something. If you're in a super, super deep league and you're trying to be preemptive, you know, Byron Pringle's just a name just to keep on your radar.
All right. Well, we also saw Antonio Brown make his Patriots debut last week, and it left fantasy owners trying to figure out how the snaps, how the targets were all going to be distributed. I know I had a heck of a time even trying to figure out Sunday morning, you know, with all the reports that were coming in that he was going to get a bunch of work, that, you know, he wasn't going to be worked in that much. We knew he hadn't had that much practice time with him. Just trying to figure out where he should slot in the rankings was kind of difficult on Sunday morning. And I don't know if I did the best job, because I think I had him as more of a high-end wide receiver three. And he ended up producing pretty well because they really fed him the ball early in the game. It's hard to trust the data from that game. Just not only is it his first outing with the team and such a small sample size, but it was such a lopsided affair with the Dolphins too, right? And it might be a similar situation this week going against the Jets, who are going to be quarterbacked by Luke Falk, right? Like, the Patriots are just going to blow them out again, we have to assume. So is there anything that we can take away, though, from that initial Brown appearance with the Patriots, even though it was so small and kind of a force-fed situation early in that game? Is there anything that we could take away when we're looking at guys like Julian Edelman and Josh Gordon, how they're going to work with Brown moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. It was a very hard situation, so I wouldn't feel bad to nail on Sunday morning, you know, going in. I feel your pain. Just one quick thing on Brown before I jump into Gordon and Edelman, you know, to your point. He only played 34% of the snaps. He ran a route on 47% of Tom Brady's dropbacks. I mean, much of that, so nearly half of them, but it's to your point because the Patriots were so far ahead, they didn't really need to pass much in the second half. But what's crazy is only on half of Brady's dropbacks, Antonio Brown accounted for 29% of the targets. That's insane. So what that says to me is he basically knew, you know, Justin, a handful of plays. They probably got him up to speed on like 20 plays. And their desire was probably, let's just give him everything we can. Whatever happens, happens on those plays. We're going to blow the Dolphins out anyway, but let's make Antonio Brown happy, right? Let's get him happy. Let's get him off to a good start. And I think that's exactly what happened. Now, as far as what we can expect going forward, the one thing I'll say is, you know, even though it was on limited work, when you go watch that game, Antonio Brown is still clearly an elite receiver. You know, I have no clue what will happen, you know, with his legal situation. I don't even, you know, want to, you know, try to figure that out. But as long as he's on the field, he is the wide receiver one. I mean, let's face it, Julian Edelman is a nice player, but he's a scheme fit, right? Josh Gordon is a good player and they want to use him to stretch the field. But Josh Gordon really, you know, even last year, you know, he had some nice games with Brady, but we didn't see the old Flash Gordon we were used to. Now, could that still happen? Sure, it could. But I think Antonio Brown is locked in. as the wide receiver one. So in my going forward projections, Justin, I'd be curious to hear what you did. But I have Antonio Brown slotted for over 25% of the target share going forward. I dropped Julian Edelman down to right around 21 to 20%. I had him around 24 to 25. And then I had Josh Gordon up close to 20, and I just dropped him down to 15%. So I think they're the clear lead guys. The good news is the Patriots don't have any tight ends. So it's not like tight ends are going to be an issue. They're not going to see any of the targets. You know, they're going to see very little. But you do still have Rex Burkhead plus James White. You know, they're going to probably be good for, you know, 15 to 20% of the target share per game. And then to your point earlier, it's like, man, if they have these game scripts, you know, I think they get the Redskins before long as well. I don't think they actually have a challenge until like week 9, like when I look at the schedule from the perspective of another.
It's a crazy easy schedule.
Yeah, it's so soft. So when I think about Josh Gordon and Julian Edelman, I think we're in for a roller coaster because I don't know that they have to pass much after the first half of many of these games. And I do think Antonio Brown, watching him play, is by far the best receiver on this team.
Well, it's easy to forget with all the craziness that happened with Brown, and it's not over yet, obviously. It's still ongoing, but he's still an outstanding receiver. He's right up there. He might still be the best receiver in the NFL right now. Like, he's in the conversation for sure. So initially, right now, I have him ranked as a wide receiver 2, and I bumped those other two guys. I'm right with you. I bumped them down into like the high-end wide receiver 3 range, and I think it is going to be kind of volatile week to week. Who's going to get the touchdown? I mean, last week we saw Gordon wasn't really that involved. He didn't really have to be. And then I think over time here, as Brown gets more comfortable with this offense, and once we get closer to the fantasy playoffs, he's probably going to be right back up in that wide receiver 1 range, because I don't think there's going to be a situation where they don't try to get him the ball. I think that they're going to continue to do that. They're going to continue to make him happy, like you talked about, because that's the smart way to coach a player like that. Now, there's a whole other side of it. Is he even going to be there by the time the fantasy playoffs come around? We don't know. The commissioner's exempt list, all that sort of stuff could come into play. But if he stays on the field, I see him eventually getting back up into that wide receiver 1 range with the other two guys sort of fighting in that wide receiver 2, low-end wide receiver 2, high-end wide receiver 3 range.
Yeah, we're totally on the same page. I mean, again, the data's there is one thing, but man, just watching the game, and I went back and watched that one, Antonio Brown is just clearly a difference maker. He still is, to your point. So,
well, that the Patriots receiving core, obviously, super interesting with all those guys there, and with Brady still getting it done at his age. I'll also admit, I've just been fascinated by the Cardinals offense leading up into this season through the first few weeks. I just wanted to see as much of it as I could to try to get a handle on what was going to happen there, especially in that receiving core, because it's still kind of sorting itself out. But with the amount of 4 wide sets they're using, a lot of guys are getting opportunities. So I wanted to ask you, based on your data, what you've seen so far, are you confident in Larry Fitzgerald and Christian Kirk, who we've kind of seen step up so far? Both of them went over 100 yards last week. Or is there anybody else in that receiving core that you think's, you know, getting enough snaps, maybe getting enough usage that we could see them pop? Maybe they warrant consideration for fantasy as well.
Yeah, I feel really good about Fitzgerald and Kirk. And that's how I started to feel towards the end of the preseason, just because, at first I was a little concerned because I wasn't for sure who was going to step up, right? There was word of Larry Fitzgerald having to play outside. You know, that meant he was going to play better coverage. You know, the further you are from the quarterback, you know, on a throw, the lower your catch rate's going to be. You know, that's, you know, something that, you know, just goes into whenever you're thinking about projections. But as these other guys, just no one really stepped up. You know, you were seeing a rotation, you know, of guys. Now, Keyshawn, you know, Johnson did some nice things in the preseason, but, you know, he's still a rookie, later round pick. You know, I just started to feel like this is going to be funneled through Fitzgerald, Kirk, and Johnson, you know, David Johnson. Now, I'm a little more worried about David Johnson just because their line is so terrible and how bad they are in the red zone. But overall, I mean, what we thought we would see from Cliff Kingsbury, we have in the first week, you know, 2.68 plays per minute. That was tops in the league. Last week, 2.41 plays, you know, per minute. You know, that was third, I believe, or second in the league last week. So, I mean, they're clearly going to run a lot of plays. Now, they're struggling with time of possession. You know, they've been, you know, the other, you know, teams have been able to hold the ball. Now, the Ravens are really good offense. I think the Ravens held the ball 38 minutes and the Cardinals only had it 22 this last week. So that held their attempts, you know, down to 54. But overall, the pace and the energy, like you said, around this offense, I'm fine with Larry Fitzgerald and Christian Kirk. I think they're great locks as wide receiver 3s with upside to, on any given week, you know, can explode to be your wide receiver 1. I do feel a game brewing for Christian Kirk. I mean, the targets are coming, you know, so he's had 19 and 18% of the targets. And typically, you know, Justin, when you see something like that, you're like, oh man, you know, that's nice, but it's not really something that's going to sustain you from a fantasy perspective. But when you run as many plays as they do, it can, because that's translated into 10 and then 7 targets. So I see Fitzgerald and Kirk talked about this on a week one podcast, another pod that I do, the At Fantasy Football Hustle, that I do with my co-host Brian Drake. We talked about this, and I felt, you know, 7 to 8 targets per week is pretty much locked in for Fitzgerald and Kirk, and I don't see that changing. So I feel really good about them. The one other guy that's staying on the field, you know, the most, Justin, so Demir Byrd, snaps have been 88% and then 93%. But the bigger thing that folks really should pay attention to if they care about receivers and tight ends, you want to know how many routes is this receiver running, you know, per drop back by the quarterback. And so Demir Byrd was on the field for 90% and then 93% of the passing plays in week one and week two for the Cardinals. And he's had 7 targets each week. So really, he's right there with Kirk and Fitzgerald, but nobody's talking about him. They're the two better players. But I think why the Cardinals keep him on the field, you know, Justin, is because Demir Byrd is the guy that can stretch the field. Now, they haven't used him that way. His ADOT has only been a 10.1 and a 4.7, and Kyler Murray is uncorking some deep throws. He's thrown as many or more deep passes than everyone else in the league to this point. So I see a game coming where if you are in a super deep league, you know, and you just want to pick up Demir Byrd because maybe you've got, you know, injuries and there's just not a lot on your wire, he is a guy where the underlying data is there. He's being used. He's on the field. He's in an offense that's, you know, running a lot of plays. It's not something you can guarantee, but you could do worse than Demir Byrd.
Yeah, toss him on your bench as a stash maybe at this point and just see what happens, see if he does end up stepping up at all. We got a lot to get to today. The other thing I'll mention actually with the Cardinals too, just that I mentioned with the Chiefs with Mecole Hardman and that rookie learning curve, we're going to see the same thing with Kyler Murray, right? Over time here, you have to assume he's going to get even better as the season goes along. So that's only another reason to want to invest in that offense. Moving along here, though, let's talk some running back. We talked about receivers a couple questions here. Let's move on to running back. Josh Jacobs off to a very hot start, obviously, through 2 weeks. Now he's dealing with this groin issue. He's going to have to go up against a tough Vikings run defense. It seems like he's going to play this week, but he's got a very tough matchup. And there's some underlying concerns, I think, here about his usage in the passing game as well. So looking at the utilization report, is it telling us anything about the first round rookie here and what maybe we could expect or not expect from him moving forward?
Yeah, my biggest concern for Jacobs, and this was even after week one, you know, in week one, so game scripts are so huge to many of these runners. I felt in the preseason, you know, based on what we had seen, everything we had heard, that Jacobs would easily be the guy to be in the game with a lead. He was going to get the first and second down work probably, you know, pretty much all of the time, might get a breather here or there. And then I thought he could be on the field in third downs if the game was really close or, you know, if it was something where they had a slight lead. But what I was worried about, Justin, was what was it going to be like if they're down by 3, 10, you know, anything 7 plus, basically. What was that going to look like? How much would Jalen Richard work in? Because he is a really good, you know, back as a receiver. And so what we've seen in these first 2 weeks is that Richard, his routes per dropback have been at 30% and 30%. Jacobs went from 37 down to 26. Now, to be fair, like you said, he did leave the game for a stint. But what I'm seeing here, and we do need another data point because the injury to Jacobs kind of makes it tougher to get a true read on this. DeAndre Washington came into the game and played 24% of the snaps, but that was really as Jacobs' handcuff while he was getting an IV. So if you do own Jacobs and you wanted to know who the handcuff is, it is DeAndre Washington. But I do believe that what we're going to see in this third game, and we could get a really good handle on it, you know, right away, Oakland is an 8-point dog going to Minnesota this week. If that holds true, we're going to see the Raiders play from behind a decent bit in this game. And if, assuming Josh Jacobs is healthy, if we continue to see Jalen Richard get out there on the field and passing downs, or maybe even the 2-minute type drill stuff, or when, you know, coming into the end of the half, or, you know, if we see that in the second half with the team trailing, I think we'll have the answer we need. But my concern is that Jacobs is going to be a great running back like Derrick Henry and Marlon Mack when the team is leading and the script goes well. But he's going to be dependent on a big player, a touchdown in the weeks where they're trailing to a team, you know, like the Chiefs.
Let's talk about another rookie running back here, David Montgomery. He started a little bit slower than Jacobs, but that's in part due to the fact that he's in sort of a three-way committee, a timeshare there in Chicago. Montgomery could be coming up on a bit of a breakout spot this week, though. That's at least what I'm seeing. They're road favorites against Washington on Monday Night Football. So I want to know, this Bears committee approach, Dwayne, do you think it's here to stay? Or are there actually some signs of life here that Montgomery might be headed towards that breakout? Am I on the right track?
Yeah, I think there are signs of life. I think Montgomery this week, to your point, is a great... He took a step this last weekend because he had gone from 38% of the snaps up to 45%. And I know some folks go, well, that's not significant. And you're right, it's not. But rushing percent, so the number of attempts, he took 40% in week one. He took 62% of the team attempts in week two versus Denver. And, you know, so his attempts went from 6 to 18. And the other really great thing for him that's a positive is inside the 5-yard line last week, the team had 5 rushing attempts. He got all 5 of them. So yep. He's clearly the guy they want to use around the goal line. We see that in the right kind of game where things are staying close and they think the matchups are right, which I think is going to be the case against the Redskins, I see them, to your point, leading that game. Now, the Redskins have, you know, hung around in the first quarter with some pretty good teams, you know, the first 2 weeks of the season with Philadelphia and then with Dallas last week. But I think we'll get a really good look at Montgomery in the second half. And if he plays well, this script could give him that chance to play well. What we need to see now is not only see the coaches are trusting him more, but he needs to break a few big plays. Because what I've seen on the film with him so far, Justin, is he just doesn't, he doesn't look super explosive. He looks solid. He looks good. He makes people miss and he does those things. I just don't see that gear to make someone pay whenever, you know, he makes that nice jump cut and now he's got a lane and he could make a big chunk play. It's like he just kind of keeps going that same speed. And I'm like, okay, dude, come on. Like, where's that next gear? Are you going to go? Are you just waiting? Are you trying to like set up your next move? And I'm, this was kind of the thing on Montgomery coming out, you know, and it wasn't a bit, I don't care so much about 40 times. It's just like Josh Jacobs. I don't care about Josh Jacobs 40 time. I know what kind of runner he is. And I felt similar about Montgomery, but more of his game is based on elusiveness. So he's going to have to show that he can make some bigger plays here. But if he does, I think that's his path to eliminating Mike Davis from the equation. I think the negatives are this. Tariq Cohen's never going to be, you know, eliminated from the equation because he's too good as a mismatch weapon against linebackers and safeties in the right situation. So I don't ever see David Montgomery being able to get, you know, really big run in the receiving game. So if you look at it over the first couple of weeks, Montgomery had 28% of the routes per dropback and then 26%. Cohen went from 75 to 52%, but that was more to do with Anthony Miller and Trey Burton being healthy, and they didn't have to play Cohen at receiver as much. And then you had Mike Davis drop from 49% to 19%. So Davis is clearly now in the third role, and I do think Montgomery could put his foot, you know, on the gas here and have a big weekend efficiency-wise. I think that's the key to seeing Mike Davis go away. I do think he's capped, though, at RB2 territory because Cohen is too good at what he does. What do you think, Justin?
I agree with what you said there. I think Montgomery, he doesn't have that extra gear. I really loved him coming out. I mean, the guy breaks tackles like few players can. And I do think as the season goes along here, it's going to be his backfield. Cohen can be used in so many different ways. Cohen, like we saw in week one, Cohen doesn't even need to be used as a running back, right? Cohen can be lined up anywhere in the offensive formation there. So he doesn't necessarily completely eat in to Montgomery's workload there. But the thing I was excited that you mentioned, and I sort of responded when you said it, was the work around the goal line for Montgomery. And I think that's huge. When we know he has that role, I think it's only a matter of time then. We're just going to see Davis get less and less. And sticking in the NFC North here, we saw the Lions just, you talked about eliminating from the equation. CJ Anderson just got eliminated from the equation for the Lions. He only had 5 carries last week, though, so I know everybody went crazy about, oh my God, what does this mean for Kerryon Johnson? 5 carries isn't that much. I think he had maybe 8 touches in week one. Seems like they're pretty dedicated, though, to that RBBC. What have you seen from that group in terms of snaps and touches? And who do you think is going to benefit the most here from Anderson's departure? Is it going to be Kerryon, or might it be somebody like Ty Johnson?
Yeah, this is a team that is so frustrating. But hey, what did we expect? Matt Patricia, where does he come from? Bill Belichick. I mean, this goes deep, right? And we saw it last year. And what was crazy, if you think about Patricia, even last year, I remember the reporters, it was so awkward. They would literally, and I give the reporters some credit because they're like, basically saying, Kerryon Johnson looks really good and LeGarrette Blount looks pretty crappy. Why does LeGarrette Blount keep getting carries? And Matt Patricia was just, you know, at running back, it's more about the volume of the running game, and we just want to keep our guys healthy. And then he said the same thing this preseason, and we've seen it come true so far. I mean, Kerryon Johnson, 57% of the snaps and then 55% of the snaps. Rushing attempts, 50 and then 43%. You know, and Ty Johnson is the guy that picked up. He went from 10% of snaps to 20, and then his rushing attempts went from 3 to 18%. What I do see here, though, with C.J. Anderson leaving, he had had 29 and 20% of snaps and then 34% and 18% of the rushing attempts. I think there is a chance here, you know, Justin, because here's the deal with Kerryon. Kerryon is great between the tackles, and Kerryon's also a viable receiver. So if I think about that New England backfield where they typically try to have three backs, Kerryon can really play the role of two. He could be, Kerryon can be Sony Michel plus Rex Burkhead. And that allows Ty Johnson to just be James White. And so that's what I want to watch for, you know, this week. Can I guarantee it's going to happen? No way. I can't, just because the way that this coaching staff is done. But I don't think a lot about Josh Perkins, you know, or Paul Perkins, sorry, who they signed, you know, yesterday as well. I do think this is going to be the shot for Kerryon Johnson to, you know, kind of own two of those roles and Ty Johnson to own the other. I by far think Kerryon Johnson is, you know, I think he's one of the top 12 talented runners in the league when you go back, you know, and you really watch his film and you watch all the things that he can do. So I'm got both fingers crossed right now. I may keep them crossed the whole show that it's Kerryon Johnson.
Yeah. Light a candle, all that sort of stuff. Right. Exactly. I traded for Kerryon in a dynasty league this off season. And it was before they actually got rid of Theo Riddick. I saw that coming. And then, you know, with Anderson there, with the way they started the season, I was a little bit worried. I'm excited to see Anderson gone, but sort of as you outlined, I don't have confidence that this coaching staff is going to give Kerryon the touches. I hope what happened was this week they saw that highlight of Kerryon where he like broke a couple tackles and spun out of another and then jumped a defender. Hopefully they saw that and they went, yeah, why do we have CJ Anderson here? Maybe that's what actually spurred them to do it, but there is an opportunity. This is going to be his shot. And it's all going to come down to the Lions being a little more successful, though, right? In some of these games, getting more scoring opportunities, getting more positive game scripts. And that's another thing that I don't know that I have as much confidence in here. And not looking at their schedule in front of me, but they're a team that I don't project to have that many wins or really be in the playoff hunt at the end of the season here. So
real quick, just kind of a big picture thing. I think you're making a great point. A lot of this we just don't know yet. I don't know about you, Justin, but the way I feel, and I talked about this yesterday with Sigmund Bloom, I went on the couch with him and we chatted a lot about this, but I feel like this is like the last week of the preseason just ended. We have a lot of teams that didn't play a lot of players in the preseason, you know, less than what we've seen in the past, especially a lot of quarterbacks. And then when you combine that, think of how many offensive coordinators and coaching changes we had. We have tons of teams installing new offenses. This is one of them. Daryl Bevel, this is his first year with this team. You could argue the talent is here. Marvin Jones, Kenny Galladay, TJ Hawkinson, Kerryon Johnson, and then you have some other role players like Danny Amendola. I mean, there are some things to work with here. And it's hard to make a definitive call on some of these teams right now, and I know that's what folks want to hear. And that's, I believe me, I'm an analytics guy. I want to give the definite, yes, do this. It's just a little tough. This season, you got to take everything in context. The way this season is working out, I feel like we're just now about to be coming into truly. Now, some teams have been hot and they're doing their thing, but I think a lot of teams, think about it. Minnesota, you know, they're installing basically Kubiak's offense. I know we're going to talk about Green Bay eventually. They're installing, you know, the Shanahan style offense. You know, so I mean, there's a lot of teams that are doing new things that these quarterbacks haven't had to do before. And so I think we still have a lot, you know, that's undetermined, but I think there is upside with Detroit's offense because I do think the talent is there. And Daryl Bevel has ran some successful offenses in the past.
Well, I've talked about that. Even another team, Tampa Bay, you know, everyone looking at that offense and going, you know, how come OJ Howard's not involved and look how bad Winston looks. Listen, maybe Jameis Winston is just going to end up being a bad quarterback and he's never going to put it together, but also, you got to give some of these teams more than a couple weeks when they have those new coaching staffs in there. So I also am holding on some of those guys. And that was one of the things I did on Monday show, just talking about some of the players I would drop. But there's also a few guys that you should hang on to and see how things work out. And I think some of those pieces in Tampa fit that mold as well. You mentioned Green Bay. It's our last NFC North question, I promise. It's a hot division, I guess, right? We've been really on top of them here the last couple of questions. This is a pro Aaron Jones podcast. I think they all should be. We saw him have a big game in a tough matchup last week. I talked about the Vikings being a tough run defense for Josh Jacobs. Didn't seem to be a huge problem for Aaron Jones last week. More importantly, we need to know, though, how he's being used by this new coaching staff. And it fits right in with what we've been talking about here. Do you see any concerns with Jamal Williams still eating into Jones' workload here? Or can we finally say definitively that this is Jones' backfield and now they're preparing for the Broncos to come to Lambeau, which is another game I think he could take advantage of?
Yeah, I think we can definitively say Jones is the one, right? Now, he's not on the level of, you know, what we call someone, right? The bell cow, you know, quote unquote kind of guys. He's not quite there because Jamal Williams is working in on some passing downs. He's seeing the 2-minute drill work. But it's not like Aaron Jones is not running, you know, routes. Aaron Jones is out there this past week, 43% of Aaron Rodgers' dropbacks, Aaron Jones was running a route, 46% Jamal Williams was running a route. So Williams is slightly edging him there, but it's not a situation where it's like, oh, Aaron Jones, we're passing, it's third down and long, you come off the field, Jamal Williams has to be on the field. Basically, they're splitting those situations, and then Jamal Williams is basically spelling him every third or fourth drive. So Jamal Williams, every third or fourth drive, he's getting that. And then on top of that, he gets about half of the work in the passing game. And so Aaron Jones is great. What I love that I'm seeing from Aaron Jones is really when I watch the game, he was so close even in week one. That was a horrible game script, you know, whenever you look at the way that whole thing worked, you know, with the Packers. And it wasn't so much the script, but they played a really tough defense in the Bears. But he was really close in that game to breaking a couple of big plays on the wide zone stuff and then the inside zone. And he's just a much better wide zone runner than Jamal Williams. The thing that I would give, you know, to your audience, you know, Justin, is when they're out there running their staple play, this is basically Kyle Shanahan / Sean McVay style offense that the Packers are now running under LaFleur. They're running the wide zone. It's a staple. It's Aaron Jones every time. It's Jamal Williams is not getting those types of carries. So I think that keeps Jamal Williams literally tucked away in a role that's just give Jones a breather every once in a while and then help us out in the passing game because they like him as a blocker. So I do think Aaron Jones is good there. And the other thing is, you know, you saw it this last week. He did break one of those big runs, but I think there are some big plays to come because he's a great fit in this scheme. So last week, 70% of the team attempts. So that's really good. You know, there's,
yeah, for sure.
You know, that's about as elite as it can get. Some guys will get 80%, you know, but that's very rare. 70% is about as good as it can get. The one thing I would say that could hamper Aaron Jones would be it's not so much matchups. We've seen him be decent against a couple of good, you know, defenses now. The one thing that could get him is I'm interested to see what happens if they really fall way behind in a game. That could elevate Jamal Williams to see more snaps in that particular type of scenario because if they're trailing and having to pass the whole game and they're splitting the passing work 50-50, that's the trapdoor scenario for Aaron Jones. But in games where the Packers are competitive or it's, you know, at least, you know, within a touchdown, I don't see a way that Aaron Jones isn't the lead guy.
Well, the good news is they're playing the Broncos this week, so I don't see a scenario where they're going to fall way behind.
I agree.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I think you're in good shape.
I think there was maybe a very small buy-low window for Jones after week one. Seems like that's closed, though.
I agree.
You mentioned Sigmund Bloom going on the couch. Let's use a Sigmund Bloom term before the next question here. We're trying to find clarity in these backfields, right? I don't know if Sigmund said it in your episode, but he does talk about it all the time. We're trying to find clarity. Another backfield where we need a little bit of clarity on, just because there's been some changes here since the start of the season, is the 49ers. Tevin Coleman, he's out, going to be out another month or so here. We expected it to be Matt Breida and Raheem Mostert, but then Jeff Wilson Jr. got in the mix with some goal line work there. What did you see when you dug a little deeper into that San Francisco backfield?
Yeah, this is a great question. It's one of the ones that I've been hit the most with, you know, on Twitter around the utilization reports. And it does take another layer. So let me just lay out the baseline of it. So last week, what we saw, 46% of the snaps to Mostert, 30% to Breida, and then 21% to Jeff Wilson. And then as far as carries go, 31% to Mostert, 29% to Breda, and 24% to Jeff Wilson. The guy that got the most of the receiving work was Mostert. 52% of the time that Garoppolo dropped back to pass, it was Mostert that was running a route. The other 26% of the time, it was Breda. Jeff Wilson was used zero in the passing game. But taking it a layer deeper, I actually went back and charted, you know, all of their utilization, because this is one where it was a little bit tricky. But if you look at the game all the way up through the ninth drive that they had, which basically put them into the fourth quarter, and they were up 41-10. It was Breda and Mostert tied in opportunities, 13-13. Now, Mostert had a few more targets. Breda had, you know, a couple more attempts at that point, but overall 13-13. And at that point in the game, you know, Jeff Wilson had only come in for four opportunities. Now, to your point, they are all inside the red zone. Three of them came inside the six. So he was the guy that they were using to try to punch the ball in. Now, once we got through the fourth quarter and the team was up 41-10 and they went into, let's just salt this thing away on the 10th drive, it was two runs to Mostert, two runs to Wilson, two runs to Mostert, two runs to Wilson. And then on the last drive, two more runs for Wilson. So really, Wilson picked up six carries, salting the game away, because they're blowing out the Bengals by 21 points. So what I really see here is I see Mostert and Breda truly being in a almost 50-50 type of share in a normal game where the script stays closer. And then I see Wilson only getting, you know, that red zone type of work. I do see Mostert being the guy getting a little bit more work in the passing game. I don't know if I can trust one data point on that, though, because Breda is such a good pass receiver out of the backfield. We saw it last year. I mean, he's just one of those guys that you get it to him in space any way you can and let him make one guy miss, and he's got that elite speed and he knows how to work angles. He can have you in the end zone very quickly. Now, I do want to say, I mean, Mostert had another touchdown that was called back. I want to say it was like a 29-yarder or 39-yarder, something like that. So he was on the verge of a very big day. But what I see, until we get Tevin Coleman back, are those two guys pretty much splitting, and then Wilson being a pain in the you-know-what down around, you know, the five-yard line. I'm like you. I used Breda a ton last week, especially in DFS, and he was doing great every time I'd check in on the game. I'm like, oh, yeah, man, whatever, you know, 9 carries for 90 yards. I mean, you know, his efficiency was like through the roof. And then every time I'd look up, you know, on my red zone channel, I'd be like, what number is that? Who's in there? They're at the 6-yard line. Hey, that's not Breda. Who is this? Jeff Wilson. Hey, he's an alumni for me, you know, North Texas. We don't have many players that ever make it to the NFL. So congrats to you, Jeff Wilson.
So we should send you a jersey is what you're saying.
pretty much.
I have them ranked pretty much like that too. I have Breda as sort of a low end RB2. I have Mostert as high end RB3, kind of has that RB2 upside though there. And I'm not that worried about Jeff Wilson. While we've been talking here, though, I haven't looked at the story, but I did see an alert pop up that Shanahan sort of hinted that Jeff Wilson could be the goal line back, the red zone back there. So we'll have to keep an eye on that as the week goes along. This week, the 49ers are going up against the Steelers, the Mason Rudolph-led Steelers now. Without Roethlisberger, things are going to be a lot different, obviously, for that offense. Juju Smith-Schuster, he's still going to be the top wideout, no question about that. I think he slides more into that high-end wide receiver 2 range, though, for fantasy. Dante Moncrief has just completely failed to capitalize on the opportunity he's been given to try to be the number 2 receiver there. Just really fallen flat in his face to start the season. James Washington has a connection with Rudolph. Everybody's been talking about it this week. It goes all the way back to their college days together. They've popped in the preseason here a couple times. Rookie Deontay Johnson, he's also there, kind of waiting in the wings. He's someone I liked. I mentioned him as a potential stash, my start, sit, stash, quit column last week. Have you seen a shift in playing time or in targets here going from week 1 to week 2 that might actually indicate that the Dante Moncrief experiment could be coming to a close pretty soon, and that maybe Johnson or Washington are going to get more opportunities, which I think they should?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing right now is that's in the process of occurring, and I wouldn't doubt it that the Steelers staff doesn't want to just completely eliminate Moncrief from their plans. So 90% of the snaps in week 1, and we all saw that game, right, because it was on Sunday Night Football, and just with single coverage, you know, not even having to take on the best corner on the team in Gilmore, he just couldn't do anything. You know, he had targets, but he couldn't make any kind of contested catch. So his snaps dropped from 90% to 32%. His routes per dropback dropped from 90% to 31% this past week, and his targets dropped from 21% to 3%. So he is being phased out. This is an inflection point to me, this next game, because there's a few things going on here, but let's just talk first about James Washington and Diontae Johnson. They want one of those two guys to take the role. Here's what I'm going to say. Juju Smith-Schuster plays the Z and gets to move to the slot. I think that's basically what opens up time for James Washington, is when they get into three wide, as long as it's not something where they think they're going to see press man and they just need to get 2 or 3 yards, that's going to be Ryan Switzer lined up in the slot, and they're going to probably have Juju outside. Diontae Johnson, what we saw from him is his snaps actually went up, 36 to 46, his routes per dropback, 43 to 53, and you know his targets stayed about the same, 11% versus 9%, whereas actually this last week, James Washington stayed static. 52% versus 59%, a small increase in snaps, but his routes per dropback went down a smidge, 61 to 56%, and his targets dropped from 13 to 6. So I think they're concerned about Washington's application on the field. I love the connection between him and Mason Rudolph. And here's the thing with Washington. If you give him off coverage and you let him get into his route and into his stem, he's amazing. On deep cutting in routes, on go routes, on post routes, he is a my ball, will win it mentality. He may only be 5'11", but he plays like he's 6'3", 6'4", plays with supreme confidence, you know, above the rim.
And that's what we saw in the preseason, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The problem is he struggles versus press. So if another team knows that and they have a cornerback that can play press, they're going to immediately put press on him. And that just eliminates him from the play immediately. The other thing is he makes boneheaded errors as far as understanding what he's seeing in front of him, man coverage versus zone coverage. And we saw that in the last preseason game. He was supposed to run an out route, and instead he turned it into a hook because he thought it was zone and it was versus man. And it was a pick to the safety that was covering over the top. And it was a throw from who? Mason Rudolph. Guess who Mason Rudolph didn't look at again that game except one more time? James Washington. So Washington, raw talent, yes. Certain applications on the field, yes. But I think the problem is he's limited. And while he may be elite athletically, I think Diontae Johnson could be the sneaky play here because we saw him in the preseason beat press coverage. We saw him catch back shoulder passes. We saw him work into the teeth of zone coverage defenses. So Diontae Johnson is, I'm with you. I think if you can stash Diontae Johnson, they both should be rostered. James Washington shouldn't be available. I mean, if you're in a super shallow league, don't worry about Diontae Johnson. But if you're in mid-size leagues, even maybe then, but if you're in a 12-man league with deep benches type thing, Diontae Johnson's a guy that should be rostered, in my opinion, because I think this is the week where we could see him truly eliminate Dante Moncrief just from a role period. I see him potentially being the guy that gets to be on the field the most, along with Juju Smith-Schuster. Now, would it surprise me, to your point, if James Washington comes out and plays great? No, but what I want to see, Justin, when I go back and watch it, what would validate it for me is if I go back and watch the film and think, oh man, look, he's improving against press coverage. Oh, look here. He had a situation where, you know, he knew just what to do. It was zone coverage. He read it that way. He sat down. It was man coverage, and he continued his route into doing this other thing. I would want to see those kind of things more than I would want to see him just make a big play. I expect him to make big plays. What I want to see is can he be good enough to deserve to be on the field for 80 to 90% of the snaps?
We like to finish things off each week by asking our guests, which player, or if you want to give multiple, which players are being overlooked by fantasy managers heading into week 3? Who you got?
Yeah, I think there are a few, you know, and so these are rest of the season plus week 3, but a person that I believe is being overlooked, you know how this goes. This is just, you know, people settle into, oh, this didn't happen in the first 2 weeks, so it's just not going to happen. But really their role is still there. Number one is Will Fuller. You know, Will Fuller is playing almost all of the snaps. He's in almost every route that is, you know, for almost every drop back, you know, that Deshaun Watson's, you know, dropping back to pass. Will Fuller's on the field 97% and 97%, Justin. So it's coming. And if you look at his air yards over the first 2 weeks, 107 and 131 yards, that's 238 air yards in the first 2 weeks. That's one of the tops in the league. He just hasn't had the production to go along with it. He's clearly the number two in the offense. QT's still getting back up to speed. Kenny Stills is a role player. They've got 3 or 4 tight ends, none of them are great. Duke Johnson is a nice little component of the passing game, but Will Fuller has a chance to easily be, you know, what based on what we've seen so far, I wouldn't be surprised if Hopkins sits around 30% of the target share at the end of the year, and then we look up and we're like, wow, Will Fuller was at 22, 24%. And with his efficiency, I mean, we've all seen the weeks, right? The Will Fuller three catches for 120 yards and two touchdowns. Will Fuller's a buy low. He's absolutely someone that should be used this week. His ownership, I predict, to be low. And they could have a really good shootout with the Chargers this weekend. So that's one. I have two more quick ones. So the other one is Marquise Valdez-Scantling. With the Green Bay Packers last week, you know, the way the game worked out, the Packers just didn't have to do anything after the first quarter. But Valdez-Scantling is clearly the guy that's behind Davante Adams in this offense. You know, it's going to be Jimmy Graham on and off the field based on if they're running more 12 and 21 personnel. So that's two tight ends or two running backs and a tight end. Jimmy Graham's not on the field. What does this team want to do? They want to be like Kyle Shanahan's offense. What does it do? It uses 12 and 21 personnel all the time. That's also what's killing Geronimo Allison. They just don't run enough plays with 11 personnel, and that's why he's not getting on the field. So that means in most scenarios, Marquise Valdez-Scantling is at least the second best target on the field just behind Davante Adams. If we're going to eventually see Aaron Rodgers get comfortable in this offense, and Marquise Valdez-Scantling is going to be worth owning, I'm telling you right now, he's a buy-low candidate, and it may not happen in week three, but I'm telling you, once Aaron Rodgers gets his feel for this offense, say it might be week 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, where it really starts to hit its stride, but come fantasy playoffs, Valdez-Scantling is going to be a valuable piece. And then the last one, and this one's super quick, most people know about him, just don't forget about him, it's Darren Waller. You know, he's out on the field all of the time. He's a tight end one, easy. And he's a guy where, you know, if people kind of lost interest in him because, you know, they just didn't think the stat line was as good this last week, and it wasn't. But really, all the underlying stuff was still there. You know, he had a nice target share. He was on the field whenever they were passing. He's on the field 95% of plays. For being a former wide receiver, I was concerned, man, maybe he can't block and that's going to be an issue. Nope, they don't care. They want him on the field all the time. 8 targets and 7 targets. He's a nice buy-low option, or, you know, if somebody's holding him as their tight end too, but now that he didn't have that great week, he's a guy that you can go out and get.
I like those. I got a couple as well, and I will say one of them was MVS. One of them was Marquise Valdez-Scantling, so we're lockstep on that one. Looking at week 3 and beyond, Carlos Hyde, he hasn't scored a touchdown yet. I don't think everyone's realizing the role he has in that offense, but he's been over 80 rushing yards each of the first 2 games, and as long as the game script stays close, he's going to be worth a fantasy start. As crazy as that sounds, in that offense, he has a big role. Shockingly, Carlos Hyde has found his way back into fantasy lineups. Trey Burton moving forward here, you know, obviously got off to a slow start to the year with the injury. Only played on about 40% of the snaps, I think, last week. Saw 3 targets. That number is going to increase as he gets healthier, further removed from the injury. So he was a low-end tight end one last season. I know the ceiling is there for him, obviously. If you're looking for help at tight end, and some teams are, he's somebody you can be looking at. He's available in over half of leagues right now and kind of a forgotten man. And then the other guy I will say is mainly for this week, but you can stash him on your bench as well moving forward, but it's Tony Pollard. And that's because the Cowboys are 21.5-point favorites this week against the Dolphins. They are at home in Dallas. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Zeke doesn't get a full workload here. If, you know, they don't want to put that tread on his tires, he's still kind of coming back after being out for a while there. So the Cowboys should be up big. Pollard should see plenty of opportunity in this one. I think he could be a sneaky flex play.
Yeah, I like all of those. Those are all great. Yeah, I don't see Zeke. I love Zeke this week, but I don't know that I see him needing a carry past the third quarter. Maybe mid-third quarter. You know,
maybe halftime. Who knows,
could
right?
Yeah, the way the Dolphins are going, you're right. It might be the end of the first quarter. Hey, Zeke, just take a seat, man.
Awesome. That is all for today's show. Go and check out Dwayne's work, especially the utilization report on Twitter at Dwayne McFarlane. Dwayne, I had extremely high hopes for this episode. You coming on, you completely crushed it, man. Really appreciate you joining me.
Oh, thank you so much. Like I said, happy to join anytime. Always happy to talk football. I really appreciate you guys having me on. It's always a blessing. Thanks, man.
Remember, you can find my content on the Score app and by following me on Twitter at Justin Boone. Big thanks to Dwayne. Big thanks to everybody out there for listening. And we will see you next time.
Said leave on time. My baby said leave on time. Leave on time with me tonight.